Hey, everybody, a massive fundraiser in New York contrasted with Donald Trump going to a different part of New York. And then we play snippets from our exclusive conversation with Speaker Johnson. If you want to listen to that entire conversation, become a member at members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com, members.charliekirk.com. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Every time they say democracy, they mean oligarchy. An oligarchy is a small group of interchangeable parts that run a country or a civilization. It is not about the will of the people. It's not about consent of the governed. An oligarchy is exactly why this document was fought for, the United States Constitution. If you were ever able to challenge these people, say, what exactly is small d democratic about what the current ruling class is trying to do? It's not about making people's lives better or securing the country. It's about holding on to political power. Now, there's two ways to read what happened yesterday. The first of which is that the Democrats are going to be able to raise as much money as they like. That's a serious issue. We're outgunned. We're going to be outspent. They have more full-time people on the ground, and I am underwhelmed by the lack of urgency on the right to fix this problem. We're doing our best at Turning Point Action. We are putting our energy and our money where our mouth is. This week, we hired our first class of full-time ballot chasers in Arizona. So it's a big deal how the Democrats are able to easily raise money. The second part, though, is you don't get Bill Clinton, Obama, Stephen Colbert, Lizzo, Queen Latifah together unless you're very worried, unless you're paranoid. You only go all out that early if you believe that your grip on power is weakening. And it is weakening. Joe Biden being a traitor to the United States, a sick and evil man who is destroying the country on a daily basis, had to call in the big guns. He had to call in Barack Hussein Obama, had to call in Bill Clinton. And it's amazing to me that Bill Clinton still is allowed in public Democrat circles, a man who has been involved in such suspicious, illegitimate, and evil activities when it comes to women. He still gets platformed. The women are cheering like crazy when he comes out. And they called in the big guns. And you contrast that perfectly tailored Hollywood production, all the star power, all the money, all the high production value, all the institutional support with a movement. You have a synthetic oligarchy and a machine versus a movement. Donald Trump did not spend his time hobnobbing with celebrities, billionaires. No, Donald Trump went out of his way to go to Long Island yesterday, to go to a funeral of a police officer that was murdered in cold blood, who never should have been murdered, and was killed by someone who never should have been on the streets, but was released after 21 prior arrests. Joe Biden and Barack Obama and Bill Clinton literally are coming from the bottom stage as if they're being lifted up from Dante's Inferno, as Steve Bannon would say, the first circle of hell. And just the aesthetic of it, can we play it? Just the dark red colors. This is not a movement of joy and happiness. Everything is cruel, heavy, dark. It's not building a better tomorrow. It's give us political power or else we might visit your home. We might raid you. But the Democrats have a ongoing serious problem. Number one, they lost the messaging war yesterday. Yes, they raised a lot of money, and that needs to be taken seriously. The boring stuff is going to matter. Who has the ballot chasers? Who has the voter registrations? Who has the data? The information war is also important, and the Democrats lost the information war yesterday. While Joe Biden was ascending from the pit of hell with Obama and Bill Clinton, Donald Trump was consoling a mother and a baby whose lives will never be the same because Democrats have opened the prisons, because Democrats have allowed these criminals to run rampant. Crime is up since 2019 across the country. Murders, rapes, carjackings, killing of police officers. There is another element, though, that is very important, and we cannot lose sight of it. Under normal circumstances, a Democrat oligarchy coming to New York would be met with people outside of the New York City Radio City Music Hall wanting to get in. Typically, if you have Obama, you got Bill Clinton, you got Lizzo, you got Stephen Colbert, there would be thousands of people wanting to get into the New York City Music Hall. There was a crowd last night. There was a big crowd last night. But they didn't want to get in to go support Obama and Clinton. They did not want to go in there to go get a selfie with Colbert. Outside were thousands of Arab, Muslim, Gaza protesters clamoring against Joe Biden, saying, "We will never vote for Joe Biden because of what's happening in Gaza. We will never vote for this administration." Now, some of them actually got in. Now, imagine paying for tickets just so you could heckle three presidents, and some of them got in. And it really is a tale of two presidents in New York. One of them hosted a snobbish, swanky fundraiser that went from a couple hundred dollars a ticket for the cheap seats to $500,000 a ticket. Obama, Clinton, Lizzo, and Colbert. And the other attended the wake of a slain New York Police Department officer, comforting his family and paying respects to the fallen, Jonathan Diller. It's not just that it was two presidents and two different campaigns. Dare I say, that's a picture of America. The rich and the powerful celebrate, while the muscular class struggle to pay their bills. This is why Donald Trump is ascendant. And regardless of what they throw at him, he is going to be very formidable in November. That we have to make sure that Donald Trump reaches his ceiling, but his basement is built in. It is bulletproof. Because people, and I share this view, are repulsed by Obama and Biden and the $500,000 a ticket event at the Radio City Music Hall. $26 million. Look how great we are. Meanwhile, you, the working class, you're wondering what's happening to your beloved country. Not a whisper about the border. Not a syllable about the invasion happening. About how we're borrowing $1 trillion every 100 years. It looks as if the good times are flowing. We borrow $1 trillion every 100 days. The good times are flowing at the Radio City Music Hall in New York. It wasn't just a tale of two campaigns and two presidents, but of two Americas. One America that cares about the working people, that cares about the individuals who built this country. The other America that wants fundamental and permanent transformation. Transformation from the top down, whether you like it or not. Okay, Kirk fans, I need you to stop and pay attention to this. If you deal with exhaustion, brain fog, mood swings, or food cravings, if you're constantly getting sick or simply lack the zeal you used to have in life, then I have some news for you. A while back, I found a liquid supplement called Strong Cell, and it changed my health in a very profound way. I take it every single day. Look, I knew I had to partner with them. I did the research, Google, and look up online what happens when you mix NADH with CoQ10 and marine collagen. It's simple. Every area of your body has cells, so if your cells are healthier, then you will also be healthier. You don't have to take my word for it. Listen to one of these testimonials. After taking Strong Cell for 6 weeks, I found improvement in many areas, less shoulder pain, improved mental clarity, increased natural energy, and so much more. I'm thankful that Charlie Kirk recommended this to his listeners. Rebecca says, I absolutely love Strong Cell. At first, I didn't think it would make much of a difference for my chronic fatigue, depression, and anxiety, but I thought I'd give it a chance. I've tried to find depression meds for 10 years, and since you used Strong Cell, I'm feeling better than I ever have on depression medication. Customer for life. Thank you, Charlie Kirk, for recommending this product. So there it is. You've heard from me directly and some of the users who have seen their lives changed by Strong Cell. I personally recommend taking it every day for at least 30 days. I take it every day before I go on the air, and it's helped me in more ways than I can even name. Each of our bodies is very different, so I would recommend you give the supplement at least 2 to 3 months to see the changes in your body. Go to strongcell.com and learn more for yourself. That's strongcell.com/Charlie. And don't forget to use discount code Charlie at checkout to get your special 20% discount for Kirk listeners. Or you can call 888-596-0155 to order over the phone. That is 888-596-0155 or visit strongcell.com/Charlie. President Trump went to Long Island. He didn't do the easy thing. He could have stayed at Mar-a-Lago. Play cut 127.
They're not given the respect. The police are the greatest people we have. There's nothing and there's nobody like them. And this should never happen. I just visited with a very beautiful wife that now doesn't have her husband. Stephanie was just incredible. Their child, brand new, beautiful baby, sitting there, innocent as can be, that doesn't know how his life has been changed. But the Diller family will... You'll never be the same. You can never be the same. And we have to stop it. We have to stop it. We have to get back to law and order. We have to do a lot of things differently because this is not working. This is happening too often.
A plus. Everything about that was A plus. Number one, it wasn't far from where the Unholy Thursday secular humanist group therapy celebration was happening in New York. It wasn't far from that. So you kind of got a very... It just built into this idea of a contrast. If Donald Trump, for example, would have went to Tennessee, it just would have been harder to draw those two together. But two presidents go to New York. Number two, the optics were terrific, flanked by police officers. Number three, going to a funeral. That's tough stuff. They wanted him there, by the way. Number four, Donald Trump obviously has genuine roots in New York, so it's not a forced deal. Number five, Donald Trump is acting magnanimously to a state that is trying to take his business empire away from him. This is a state where they host the fundraiser, 5,000 people, $26 million raised, and Donald Trump still goes out of his way to return to his home state of New York to honor that family. He went the extra mile to even help pay off the mortgage for that slain policeman mortgage. Hey, Joe Biden, you raised $26 million last night. Are you going to use any of that money to help pay for this poor family? No, because Joe Biden and the Democrats, they're on the side of criminals, opening up the jails, relaxing standards because they say all that stuff is racist, while they get to live in gated communities and have 24/7 armed guards. You have to fend for yourself while murders, rapes, arsons are up significantly from 2019. And by the way, while we're on the topic, Joe Biden, have you paid back the $5 million that Sam Bankman-Fried gave you now that Sam Bankman-Fried is a convicted fraudster? Have you paid that back? Joe Biden, have you spoke out at all about how this illegal immigrant has now been arrested for the rape of a mentally incapacitated girl in Alabama? Every day, we have a new story of an illegal that is raping or murdering an American here in the country. Or Joe Biden, are you just going to sit on that $26 million of cash and try to continue to run ads saying, I'm Joe Biden, I'm going to protect abortion access? You're repulsive. Play cut 82.
This morning, an illegal immigrant man is behind bars accused of raping a mentally incapacitated teen. Enterprise police arrested Pablo Mendoza after getting word of a crime happening last month. Sheriff Scott Byrd confirmed to WDHN that Mendoza is in the United States illegally. Authorities say that Mendoza had sex with the teen and the teen could not consent due to her being, quote, physically helpless or mentally incapacitated.
This is let's take a step back. Let's analyze and judge the week. Because if we're honest, let's think about it. We got April, we got May, we got June, we got July, we got August, September, October. We basically have 28 weeks. My math right? Yeah. 7 months, 28 weeks. We have 28 weeks till the election. So this is going to be a combination of weeks. This week was supposed to be a death blow to Donald Trump. I want you to think about this. They thought that they would be able to taunt and troll Trump and enjoy the Radio City Music Hall $26 million event, saying Donald Trump can't even hold on to his buildings. I bet Stephen Colbert had all of these jokes written, ready to go. On Monday, his business assets were supposed to start to be seized. Instead, Donald Trump was able to get DJT up on the markets. He's $5 billion richer. He easily pays the bond. He gets through with appeal. Yes, the Democrats had a good day. They raised a lot of money. That is now baked in. It's factored into the equation. But at the end of this week, the Democrats, they look like a ruling class that is so distant, so foreign, and so disconnected from the country that they want to govern. People, you know, use the term out of touch. That is the proper term. But the snobbery, the lack of concern, it is alien to them. A week where they thought they were going to significantly weaken Donald Trump leaves him richer and stronger than anything they could have imagined. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. We're all getting the sense that we're being lied to. Well, that's because we are. Suspicious events are unfolding. Even worse, it's hard to believe what anyone has to say about it. And we all know the mainstream media has their own agenda. That's why you need to trust your gut and take action. It's time to prepare. Get started at MyPatriotSupply.com. Load up on 3-month emergency food kits packed with ready hour foods from My Patriot Supply. You will save $200 per kit. These kits provide over 2,000 calories every day. Serving over 3 million families since 2008, My Patriot Supply is equipped to help yours achieve self-reliance. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on as many kits as you need from My Patriot Supply. They ship fast and free and arrive in unmarked boxes. Order by 3 p.m. and your order will ship the same day. Save $200 per kit at MyPatriotSupply.com. That is MyPatriotSupply.com. They ship fast and free and arrive in unmarked boxes. Order by 3 p.m. today. They're a wonderful, wonderful product, so check it out right now at MyPatriotSupply.com. All right, so we had a conversation with Speaker Johnson yesterday. I want to get into some of this tape. As you know, we've been very critical of Speaker Johnson on a lot of different things, especially I think that he really fumbled the ball back in the fall. The fall was the time to shut down the government. The fall was the time to really draw a line in the sand. But as things move in real time, you have to judge things fairly. And I'll be perfectly honest. With Kevin McCarthy, George Santos gone, Ken Buck, and Mike Gallagher, all of a sudden our margins are so thin that we got some problems here. At the same time, I don't like that $1.2 trillion bill. And to Speaker Johnson's great credit, he came on the program. He was a really great sport. And I want to play a piece of tape here. And understand, you got these moderates like Don Bacon who are basically Democrats controlling the entire apparatus here. So I believe it is cut 122. Let's go to cut 122. This was the number one question I received from you, the audience, was all about this $1.2 trillion spending bill. Let's play cut 122. So I want to talk about the $1.2 trillion spending bill, which has been met with a lot of criticism, as you know, Mr. Speaker. Marjorie Taylor Greene is going out and threatening motion to vacate. She has criticized you by saying that regular order was not followed, the amendment process, and this was done very, very quickly and kind of rushed through. I don't like the bill at all. I think it was, quite honestly, awful. Am I wrong? Walk me through it, Mr. Speaker. And was regular order followed in kind of response to what Marjorie Taylor Greene's been saying?
Yeah, great questions. Okay, look, the bill is not the bill that Mike Johnson and Charlie Kirk and Marjorie would have drafted, right? If we had the majority in the House and Senate, we're having a totally different conversation right now. And remember, we only have one vote margin in the House. So there are some good things. Let me tell you a few good things about it, and then we'll tell you all the terrible things, right? So this was, remember, 72% of this appropriations package was defense spending. Okay, we increased defense spending, which most of us understand why. We're in a dangerous time. The world's on fire because Joe Biden is projecting weakness on the world stage, and all of our adversaries are acting provocatively. We've got hot wars now, and some that are heating up elsewhere. We kept the non-defense discretionary spending completely flatlined. In divided government, we included the largest pay raise for our troops in decades, and we cut a lot of things that needed to be cut, like $50 million in military DEI programs. So we eliminated funding for UNRWA. We rescinded $20 billion of Biden's IRS expansion. We pulled back $6 billion in unused COVID funds. I mean, there were some good things on the border regarding that issue. This bill increased the baseline for DHS enforcement when Trump takes over in January. I mean, if we're going to actually arrest and detain these people and deport them, you got to have a place to put them. So we squeezed into this bill the highest number of ICE detention beds and Border Patrol agents in history, while we cut 20% from the NGOs, which are all the groups that are sending them all around the country. There's a lot of good things. We maintained all the Hyde Amendment protections, pro-life protection. Not a red cent can be used to taxpayer funds to fund an abortion. We allowed for only American flags and other official flags to fly over U.S. diplomatic facilities, no more rainbows and everything else. So, look, there's some good things in it, but there's some bad things, too. The earmarks are the things that have gotten all the attention, and there's a number of them in here that none of us wanted, and we fought hard to keep out. And as I told you offline, I was literally fighting with Chuck Schumer up until 11:58 p.m. on that Wednesday night, last Wednesday, because that was the deadline to file the legislation to give everybody not the full 72 hours that we always try to abide by, but at least time to go through the 1,000 pages with their staff, section by section, and be able to digest what the legislation was. You asked about the process, critically important thing. Look, if we could have pushed it beyond the deadline, we would have. We would have even maybe shut the government down for a day or two. But the problem is, because you're coming up on Easter break, I mean, this is the truth of the matter. We were going to have a jailbreak by Saturday morning.
And I followed up with this. Because I'm not a DC guy. I'm like you. Shut it down. That's how I feel. So I asked that question. Why don't we just shut down the government? Shut it down. And this is how Speaker Johnson replied. Play cut 123, please. And Mr. Speaker, I understand this might be kind of heretical to DC belief, but why not just say we're going to shut it down? I understand it's an election year. I know you got the slimmest majority, but if we are not ever able to make good on the one threat that we have, which is a government shutdown, which is partial, is there anything that would potentially reach that level of a shutdown? And since we have the slimmest majority and we're losing members to cable news sponsorships and Palantir, what do we have to lose? What is the argument not to shut it down, considering the crisis on the border that I know that you want to address?
Yeah, it's such an important question, Charlie. Every single one of us want to have the fight about the border. It's like a 93% issue, by the way, with the public now. But even if it wasn't politically popular, morally, constitutionally, we would be obligated to fight on it. But here's the thing about the shutdown. In this scenario right now, given the dynamics and the realities that we talked about a moment ago, if we had shut the government down, let's say on Friday, the Biden administration would have made it extremely painful on the American people immediately. The media would have jumped on, piled on, of course, and blamed Republicans for missed paychecks to troops and missed flights when they stopped paying TSA agents and, you know, unpatrolled border sectors. You know, they would have flipped the script and started to blame the border on Republicans for not arming and equipping the people who are there trying to do what they do. All the national polling confirms that a shutdown would have been very bad for Republicans and would have seriously jeopardized our ability to keep and grow our thin House majority. I mean, we absolutely have to win in November if we're going to save the country. So never once in history has a shutdown benefited the party that started it, the Republican Party. It's only backfired every time. The stakes are too high right now to have swing district voters turning against us. And everybody needs to understand this. The reality that we talked about a few moments ago, it would take a 2/3 vote to get out of a shutdown once it started. So when all that pain was turned up and everybody's blaming Republicans and people are getting more and more angry, we would have needed Democrat votes to reopen the government. And the price for those votes would have forced us to accept a far worse policy outcome than the spending bills that we got now. That is the reality. It's inescapable. You know, you'd have a big chunk of my dearest friends. I mean, I come from the conservative movement myself. I'm a hardliner myself. A bunch of my friends would never join in the vote to reopen the government. And so you could have had a prolonged, very difficult, very politically costly situation on our hands. And that was just simply not an option that we could do.
And I think, Mr. Speaker, you can sympathize with my view and the audience's view, which is we have been hearing that excuse for 11 years. And November is super important. And I want to see Republicans remain in the majority. And God forbid Hakeem Jeffries ever become Speaker. But, you know, if we rewind the clock a little bit back to October, and I know you just got thrown back into this thing, that would have been a time to shut it down and fight. We had more seats. We, you know, it's further away from the election. And what I think we're flirting with, Mr. Speaker, is that our base is losing total faith in House Republicans, at least capacity to put up some form of a fight when it comes to spending, when it comes to the border. And I want your just thoughts in response to that, because our faithful, our audience, our base, they feel as if that Republicans go to D.C. just to kind of give the Democrats whatever they want. I asked our audience ahead of this conversation, Mr. Speaker, what, you know, we want to ask, and they're fired up because they love the country. And I believe you want what we want. Yeah. You were one of the more conservative members of Congress before you became Speaker. Can you respond to that sentiment, which I think is a well-founded one that I share with the audience?
Charlie, I share it too. You're right. As I mentioned, I come from the conservative movement. For 20 years before I was elected to Congress, I was a constitutional law liberty defense litigator on the front line. But we defended religious freedom and sanctity of life in the courts and our fundamental freedoms. I worked for most of the conservative groups in the movement at one point or another, filing briefs for them in the courts and arguing the cases and all that. So, look, I come from that corner of the party, and I'm with your audience. I agree. Now, here's the thing. With the smallest majority in U.S. history, I cannot throw Hail Mary passes on every play. I'd like to, but it's not a winning playbook. It's 3 yards in a cloud of dust right now. It's inch by inch up the field. Now, look, we have to reform the way Washington works. And we have plans to do it. In fact, we just got FY24 done. That's the spending bills we just passed. We're directing our attention to FY25 right now. We are going to force, with the tiny leverage we have, we're going to force more change. We broke the omnibus fever in funding. Now we're trying to break out into actually 12 separate appropriations bills. We have an aggressive calendar to get that done way in advance of the end of the fiscal year this time. We can break some of this. But when we get this a larger majority, I mean, for goodness sake, give me at least 2 votes, right? I think we can have a larger sizable majority, not 25 or 30 seats anymore because of gerrymandering and redistricting, but we can have a bigger majority. You get that, you get the Senate, we're going to make big radical changes. I've talked to President Trump and all my colleagues about what that first 100 days looks like, and you will see proof right out of the gate. I mean, aggressive changes to the regulatory state, the deep state, the bureaucracy that's turned on the people and weaponized against them, to the budgeting and spending process, so we can get the debt under control, to all these things. I mean, the border, all these big priorities for the country, and we got to project strength on the world stage again. Our core principles are what we're defending. We're in a fight between two competing visions for the country, and ours is the same guiding principles that made us the greatest nation in the history of the world. We're going to fight for those, and we're fighting for them every day right now. You just don't see it in it highlighted because, again, the margins are so small. That's the challenge.
Want your thoughts, your feedback, freedom@charliekirk.com. You can listen to the interview in its entirety at members.charliekirk.com and also later this weekend on the Charlie Kirk Show podcast page. Are you ready to lose weight but not sure where to start? I understand. I was right where you are 2 years ago. Let me tell you why I chose the PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition Program. First, Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition. There is so much more. They know that 90% of permanent change comes from the mind, and they work on eliminating the reason you gained this weight in the first place. There's no shortcuts, pills, or injections, just solid, science-based nutrition and behavior change. And finally, probably most importantly, I lost 30 pounds. Look, they're amazing. If you want to lose weight, you got to go to myphdweightloss.com. I was just texting with Dr. Ashley Lucas today. If you're ready to lose weight for the last time, call 864-644-1900. Go online at myphdweightloss.com. Do what I did and what hundreds of my listeners have done and call today, 864-644-1900. I recommend their program. Dr. Ashley Lucas has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. Her program is based on years of research and is science-based. Second, the PhD program starts in nutrition, but it's so much more. Go to myphdweightloss.com, myphdweightloss.com. Call 864-644-1900. I lost over 30 pounds. Dr. Ashley Lucas, great American. Check it out, myphdweightloss.com. I want to play Cut 120 in just a second here. The second most common question I received from you is, Charlie, what about this George Santos thing, the Ken Buck thing, the Gallagher thing? Why can we not get control over our House conference? That was a major question we received, freedom@charliekirk.com. And this is one of the big problems with this kind of House conference story. And not all of it is on Speaker Johnson, you got to be fair, is that we had high expectations. We thought we were going to get impeachment of Biden. We thought that we were really going to get smoke and guns on a lot of this different stuff. And there's been some wins. We thought we were going to get spending cuts. So why is it that our House majority is slim? And to Speaker Johnson's credit, he came on the program. He took the hard questions. We don't have time to play this piece of tape, but you guys can hear it on the Charlie Kirk Show podcast page. Fundraising is going very well. And, you know, some of you guys are still, you know, let's just say, you know, a lot of people say, get rid of Johnson, get rid of Johnson. Okay. I mean, is he better than Hakeem Jeffries? That is a question. Because we're one vote away from that. Okay. I do ask the question, though, why are we losing our House majority? Play Cut 120. I want to talk about the kind of ever-evaporating House majority. First, Santos, you voted against expelling Santos. Was there anything that you could have done to prevent that motion from coming to the floor? Or was that privilege in a sense where it had to go open to a vote? And then additionally, Ken Buck disappearing, Gallagher disappearing. It doesn't feel as if we have control even of our members to stay unified during this highly consequential time.
Yeah, you know, the big challenge right now is keeping the team together, right? And let me say this, and I'll address each of those cases, but we have to keep our eyes on the prize. I mean, we have the smallest majority in history, but that is going to change in November. I am absolutely bullish on this election cycle. We're going to grow the House majority. I believe the Republicans are going to win the Senate and the White House as well. I think President Trump is going to have a second term. And he and I have been talking a lot about that. We got to be ready to govern, and we're going to turn this mess around 180 degrees. But we've got to get through this difficult valley to get to that other side. And it doesn't help when people leave early, obviously. I voted against the Santos expel motion. It was privileged. So some of the guys from New York brought that. It was very important to them, you know, neighboring districts and all of that. I tried to talk him out of it. It was done anyway. And so that special election, as you know, yielded a Democrat. We might have foreseen that. And I tried to stop it, but we were outvoted. A privilege motion is allowed to go to the floor, even over the objection of everyone else. So that's what happened there. Ken Buck, you know, I guess that's personal reasons for leaving early. I've considered Ken a friend all these years. We served in the House together for 7 years. He's leaving early. I tried to talk him out of it. He didn't give me a lot of notice. He called me about 20 minutes before he made it public. So there was not a lot of time for dialogue on that. Gallagher is a colleague and a friend, a classmate of mine. We served together. He's done great work in Congress, you know, the Select Commission on China, Select Committee on China, for example. I've encouraged him to carefully consider all his options to limit the time his seat remains vacant, and including the idea of serving his full term out in some limited capacity. But, you know, I'll leave it to him to explain all his reasons why he needs to depart before the end of the year. But there is a caveat to that one that maybe people aren't aware of, but Wisconsin election laws is a little bit different. And there's a big risk under that state's law that if Gallagher leaves before April 9th or after May 14th, there's a risk the Democrat governor there could push the special election back to fill the seat to a date that's even later than the November election, and that would leave us with a vacancy at the start of the new Congress. So there's a lot of calculation that's going into that. But the point is, Charlie, my job is to keep this team together, to keep everybody rowing in the same direction so we can deliver and grow the majority, because our mission is to save the country. Without a Republican majority, we have no hope of doing that.
Here's my piece of feedback to that particular tape. And I say this privately and publicly to Speaker Johnson. You're being way too nice to these guys. The people that you're calling friends are stabbing you in the back, and they are destroying the House majority. If Gallagher says that, well, that's okay, Mike Gallagher. You'll never be invited to anything regarding the Republican Party again. Done. Period. You'll be excommunicated. In fact, we'll expel you. Ken Buck gave you 20-minute notice, you should pull his parking pass and say, no, I'm going to get an expulsion vote on the floor before you get to go become a CNN contributor. You have to be willing to use political power against people who screw you over. Way too nice guy in that sense. And in some ways, you know, being a nice person, being kind, is how he became speaker, because he was kind of the person who was really sweet to a lot of people. But this that sort of stuff has to be met with pure Machiavellianism. We have a very important story here regarding our Turning Point USA chapter at SUNY Cortland. So joining the program, we have a lawyer from the Alliance Defending Freedom, Matthew Hoffman. We also have Gabriella DeLorenzo, TPUSA president at SUNY Cortland, and Megan Rothmund at SUNY Cortland, TPUSA vice president. Welcome all of you to the program. This is a remarkable story. Both of you, Gabriella and Megan, when you started the Turning Point USA chapter, they tried to target you. They made you go through a 100-minute struggle session in public. Let's start with you, Gabriella. Gabriella, tell us the story.
So we were presenting our club to Student Senate, and it was no one really was paying attention to us, is what happened. They already had their biases about Turning Point. They already had their, you know, they already had their decision made before we even got there. And what made it worse was a faculty member, a professor, had gotten on the mic and he spread a hateful rhetoric about Turning Point USA and misinformation about it. And at that point, it was just 70 plus people attacking us, and there was nothing we can do at that point. The decision was made.
So just either Megan, why don't we throw this to you? Why did you want to start? Why did you both of you want to start the chapter? What led you to want to try and bring Turning Point USA to your campus?
Well, Gabriella actually reached out to me about becoming vice president. And as soon as she like gave me the opportunity to become vice president, I just jumped on it. I knew this was such a great organization and I knew I wanted to be a part of it. And we wanted to bring something to the school that should be on campus. I mean, it's an amazing organization and a lot of students love it.
So it's so important. And by the way, I just hope everyone understands, when you start a Turning Point group, you get targeted, you get ridiculed, you get isolated because of that. Matthew Hoffman is with us from the Alliance Defending Freedom, great organization. Matthew, you guys got involved. How did the school, let's just say, I don't want to say break the law, but not follow the proper legal framework for the starting of a chapter? And what did you guys at ADF do to help assist our amazing Turning Point USA students?
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. The First Amendment is clear that universities cannot pick and choose which views they want on campus. They cannot discriminate against conservative views. And by giving the student government the license to decide what groups can go on campus based on their views alone, the university violated the First Amendment. It inhibited the Turning Point chapters and Gabriella and Megan's speech and associational rights on campus, and that's unconstitutional.
So let me go back to Gabriella here. Gabriella, why did you persevere? What was your immediate reaction to getting denied, and what kept you going?
My immediate thought was, after we got denied, I had turned to Megan at that point and I said, we're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep going, because it wasn't fair to us that there are other clubs on this campus who get to believe in what they believe in and get to hold events. And just because people have different opinions than us, we weren't allowed to. And I actually ended up going to AmFest and I spoke to you about the situation. And you told me, you said, don't take no as an answer, just keep going. And I took that as more motivation to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I remember meeting you, and I hope everyone in the audience understands, watching and listening, these are the hope for the future. This is what fighting looks like and not giving up. Megan, what has the response on campus been from other students? And talk about the kind of resolve it took to persevere as the administration tried to get in the way of starting the Turning Point USA chapter.
Well, we definitely face a lot of backlash because there are students that don't agree with the chapter. But we've also gotten a lot of positive feedback. I mean, we had an interest meeting on Monday and we had 40 plus students come, which is really good for our first event. And we've been getting a lot of like positive feedback from people who want to be a part of the club. So we're definitely doing something right here because a lot of students feel like they're silenced, and having the club on campus is allowing them to speak their voice like we are now.
It's that's so important. And this is a lesson. People follow courage. Courage begets courage. I want to throw it back to Matthew. Matthew, can you speak broadly of anybody on campus that is experiencing this type of bias, how they can contact and work with ADF, and also how you guys are on an ongoing basis representing students' constitutional rights on campus?
Yeah, well, we encourage anyone, if you feel censored or discriminated against because of your speech on campus, to contact us at Alliance Defending Freedom. Our website is adflegal.org. And every day we see inquiries, and we're helping out students to start a Turning Point chapter, to associate together, to bring great speakers to campus. And it's just an unfortunate fact of modern life that the universities have become very intolerant to views that, like Gabrielle and Megan's, that some disagree with. And instead of, you know, debating those views or taking them on the merits, they try to shut them down or prevent them from even coming to campus. So we just at ADF want to stand beside those courageous students like Gabrielle and Megan to make a difference and inspire others on campus to do the same.
Gabriella, what happened with the administration since this controversy? Has the professor apologized? Have you guys received any apology?
No, we haven't. Yeah, apology-wise, we haven't received any apologies, like, directly from the professor or from the president. But Matthew can answer, like, the rest about, you know, what was accepted, like, throughout the lawsuit and stuff like that.
Yeah, and so I guess, you know, you guys are continuing to keep on fighting and organizing. Final thoughts, both Megan and Gabriella, what are your pitch to other students watching this that are experiencing controversy or are afraid? What is your message to them, to all the students across the country that are thinking about getting involved?
I just want to say that you're not alone at all. There are other people on your campus who support you. And if you get denied, it's okay. Keep pushing, keep fighting, because we will lose our democracy if we don't have these conversations. And it's a big problem that we see on our campus and how one-sided it has been. I've been silenced out my campus since I was a sophomore, and I just kept going and I just kept fighting. And when you speak out, more people will back you and speak out with you. You give other conservatives and other people who feel the same way as you a voice on campus, and you empower them to speak out.
Well, Gabriella, and yeah, please, Megan, your thoughts.
I really hope that we can, like, inspire people who felt the same way, like, hidden in the darkness, just to come out and make sure that you're feeling welcomed, you're feeling accepted on college campus, because that's what college is about. We hope that we open the door for people that feel uncomfortable to do what me and Gabriella did, and just allow people to feel comfortable in college.
Well, I think it's terrific. We'll see both of you at our Young Women's Leadership Summit, I hope. God bless you both. And thank you, Matthew, for defending them. Thank you all.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.